Keep cool this summer when you shop ceiling fans at Menards. Upgrade your space with a quick install ceiling fan from Patriot Lighting. They're loaded with extra features that will make your ceiling fan install a breeze. Plus, they reduce energy costs, helping you save time and money. Save big on our great selection of ceiling fans. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
True crime today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents. A tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015. An environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure. Until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed, for what?
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any breaking updates on this case and conversations as we have them. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. We're going to continue a conversation and dive deeper into the psychological elements of the Koberger case, specifically empathy. We're going to be talking more with psychologist John Delatorre about that in just a few moments. But I want to take everyone back a little bit to a few weeks ago when we were early to report on the social, not social media at the time, but it was a message board. So I guess it's a form of social media, but we're talking about 2010, 2011 in terms of the time window of when this information was originally posted to this message board. It was a health message board that Koberger had made some postings to, talking about disconnection, talking about his realizing that pieces of him, pieces of his life, pieces of his brain didn't seem to really work like they used to. Speaking specifically about not being able to emotionally connect to those around him around the holidays, and his father being a good man, but why does he treat him such in a negative way? He was really almost reaching out for help. And this is a post from July 4th of 2011. I'm just going to read through it, and then we'll start talking with our guest about this and this disconnection and depersonalization that it seems he was beginning to suffer from and noticing as he became later into his teen years. And if he's in fact the murderer, likely something that just continued to fester and get more and more ingrained in his personality, allowing him to commit acts like he did. So this is from July 4th of 2011. It says, I had this horrible depersonalization go on my life for almost 2 years. I often find myself making simple human interactions, but it's as if I'm playing a role-playing game, such as Oblivion. I can see what's going on. I'm slightly into it, but I can pause the game and focus on my real life. In this case, my life is the game, and my old self can be reached by pausing the game. But how? I often think of things that humans do, things I have done my whole life. I feel like an organic sack of meat with no self-worth as I'm starting to view everyone as this. Everything I have ever done makes no sense. How did things get this way? How am I wearing this shirt? And who decided that humans shall wear shirts like this? Are we all just advanced animals with possession, or is there more that I can't see? I can't connect. I view everything as I would if I was playing that video game, pointless and full of nothing, out of reality. I'm moving out of my house. My last holidays were already lived. But where was I? As my family group hugs and celebrates, I'm stuck in this void of nothing, feeling completely no emotion, feeling nothing. I feel dirty, like there's dirt inside of my head, my mind. I'm always dizzy and confused. I feel no self-worth. I'm intelligent, but I feel the opposite. I say things I don't mean. The last holiday in my house, the house I grew up in, the house I once contributed to, the house I once felt at home in, is past. As I hug my family, I look into their faces, I see nothing. It's like I'm looking at a video game, but less. I feel less than mentally damaged. It's like I have severe brain damage. I'm stuck in the depths of my mind where I have to constantly battle my demons. Am I here or am I fake? I feel myself slipping away. I hear screams faintly, but I constantly battle away from it. What if I let go? Where would I be? Would I ever come back into reality? I try to remember where I originated from, but I can't. I barely remember my childhood. I often fear being 80 years old, alone, and having faint memories of my parents, everything I missed out on. I think about my father. What a good man he is. How I treat him like dirt because I have this condition and I can't take it. I might spiral out of control and lose myself in the void. I can't let it all go. All of these regrets I predict for my future self. All of these thoughts of remorse. I got this when I was in my stage of discovery. Now I look in the mirror and see this sickly, tired, useless, and stupid man in the mirror. He's a complete disgrace. I don't even deserve to live. I remember when I was 15, I would wander alone at 2 a.m. Everything was so generic. Nowhere felt like home. I saw things that were not there, a different reality. I felt eerie and alone. I died during those nights. I felt like a criminal. But where was my record? I can't talk without flinching now. I used to be this healthy, blonde-haired boy with blue eyes and a few years of darker hair and darker eyes. Half of my body weight. Where did I leave off? I try to sleep. I try to clear my head, but the pressure won't go away. The pain and depression won't leave. Being me is this horrible disease that I was given. I think of this as I succumb to sleep. But I see a large intensity of black, yellow, white fuzz. It makes my mind fizzle, and I can barely keep in the bounds of reality, as if the ringing in my ears and fuzz in my visions is simply all of the demons in my head mocking me. I fall asleep, but I wake up quickly to bloody screams. Is any of this here? Am I brain damaged? No. Then why am I like this? I have these thoughts all in my head. I search for someone to relate to me. Everyone looks down upon me. No one can relate. As I try to read, suddenly my eyes look right through the words. When I look up, I see blue dots near the center of my vision when I feel slightly calm. It gets hard to breathe, and I see bright dots in my vision. Nothing I do is enjoyable. I am blank. I have no option. I have no opinion. I have no emotion. I have nothing. Can you relate? It's a very sad letter. Someone who seriously should have been able to get or gotten professional help at that time, as at that moment, it seemed he was able to recognize these traits in himself that were not what he remembered from his childhood. And these are serious things. These are things that, if diagnosed early, if treated, you know, can steer someone in another direction. But it doesn't seem like that is what happened. It seems that this man kind of went on with his life, developed a very, I would almost call it eating disorder. And in no way am I saying that being a vegetarian or being a vegan is an eating disorder. But from what we know, some of the lengths to which he went to and how particular he would be with people and even cooking techniques, as to requiring pots and pans be something that even washed, never have touched meat, very OCD-ish in terms of character there, compulsive. And the depersonalization does add up quite a bit. But at the end of the day, if you're just meeting someone like this on the street or having some sort of a interaction with them, you would say they lack empathy. And I think he noticed it back then that he didn't have empathy. He didn't say that specifically, but what he was describing was exactly that. No emotion, no feeling to anything that was going on around him. And one would conclude that if you have no empathy and you have no feeling, and ordering a sandwich at the Chick-fil-A is just the same as stabbing someone, because neither really give you any emotion either way, it's not that far of a stretch to see how someone could go to such an extreme. Or one would also wonder, maybe because he was feeling nothing and his career path was in criminal justice, Did he feel that maybe the only thing that would let him feel or make him feel was to do something as horrific as he's accused of doing? Let's go now to our guest, Dr. John Delatorre, licensed psychologist, and let's talk about empathy. Is empathy something that, if one doesn't seem to have it, can actually be learned?
You know, can empathy be learned, I think, is an interesting philosophical question. I do think that empathy can be learned. And I don't think that no one feels any emotions. I don't think that. What I think happens internally with someone, particularly those individuals who kind of push the empathy to the side and decide that they're going to view humans as objects and do whatever they want. So serial killers, mass killers, these kinds of individuals. People that we would lump into as being psycho/sociopath. Mm-hmm. What I think internally is going on is that they are experiencing emotions in a way that is very different than how you and I would experience anger or sadness or anxiety. It's very different for these, for psycho and sociopath. I do think that they're having it, but some may decide that they're just going to squash it, that they're going to push it to the side and not have the internal experience. In some ways, they become super cold, right? That even when engaging in high adrenaline activities like a murder, right, like a shooting or something like that, you see zero reactivity on their faces. They're completely detached. Mm-hmm. While some other individuals, they enjoy having that that altered emotional state. They get a high off of it. So these are the high adrenaline kinds of killers, right? These are the killers that, you know, that they, you know, will go on a chase, you know, have the police chase them and stuff like that. But I think they're experiencing emotions, but their experience of it is either so intense that they need more of it or so intense that they need less of it. And so then they cut it off. And once you cut it off, or once you decide that you need more of it, then you're putting yourself in a position to exploit other people for your own gains.
What about a person who's in a situation, whether it be a parent with a child who is not of age yet and is still under their care, or a spouse that recognizes a lot of these type of traits in their significant other, absolutely loves them, but feels, you know, this could go off the rails almost at any time. But there hasn't been necessarily crimes committed, or maybe there has been some minor crimes committed. But they want that person to get help. They don't want them to go to jail, especially if there hasn't been something, you know, serious committed, which nothing would put someone in jail if there hasn't been a crime committed. But they also don't want to run away and abandon the individual just to watch them crash and burn out on their own. What comes to mind there is the Brian Walsh and Anna Walsh story that we've been hearing about. That man did tons of bizarre, horrendous things to friends and family leading up to what we believe was the murder of his wife, stealing $1 million from his father that they had a great relationship with up until that time, pilfering his estate and fraudulently becoming the executor of the estate, stealing his friend's Warhol paintings, selling them, and then also creating fake ones and selling those. I mean, just such extreme, bizarre behavior that one would have to not have any sort of empathy or thought process to say, what am I doing? This is not, you know, okay. But they just seem to go through it without any sort of feeling. Same as what we saw in court just earlier, where he was arraigned. And he sits there with kind of this dumb smile on his face and blinking his eyes like, I don't know if he's thinking he's guilty. They got me. When you have an individual like that and you are the significant other, sorry for this long-winded question, what does one do? I mean, is there help that one can get when someone is kind of that far down the lane and they've demonstrated behavior of that magnitude, that the best bet for that person is to simply get out of that relationship before you become a victim of whatever the hell they're capable of doing? Or is there a place where, you know, let's try and get them help? Or does it become more dangerous to do something like that with an individual of that nature.
I think if you're the significant other for someone like this and you're noticing these kinds of red flags, you're in a very difficult position. Because to me, if you're asking me personally, my most important thing would be, are you safe? Because here, these are some of the issues that we see, particularly in intimate partner and domestic violence, something that has gone on for too long, goes way underreported. What we see is that it's very difficult to connect, to disconnect from that individual. Are you expected to be the individual who carries the emotional load for this relationship? Particularly for women who are often required to carry the emotional labor within a relationship. Does that make you unsafe? What I would say is that if you are recognizing these kinds of things, do you have a plan in place for you to disconnect? If you don't, then maybe work with someone to create that kind of thing. If I can understand how someone would want to remain in a relationship because of the time and the emotional resources that they've devoted to it, but you need to ask yourself, am I the primary person expected to keep this relationship together? Because relationships aren't meant to be that. They're meant to be partnerships. So thinking about it from a high level lens, if you're starting to recognize a lot of these red flags, but you don't necessarily want to leave, then you're going to need to start communicating. And again, that communication can be a real big drawback, because it's certainly possible that Anna Walsh decided to communicate with and ended up paying a very severe price, because many women have in fact attempted to communicate and ended up paying a very severe price because they were expected to be something that they should not have been. This is a long-winded answer to say it's super complicated. We can't just expect someone to disconnect from a relationship, even when there's abuse contained within it. I think that if you're feeling unsafe, then you need to put a plan together to make yourself to get yourself safe.
And that's a scary thing, I think, in a lot of cases like this. You don't want to believe that you're not safe. And there may not necessarily be any signs that you are not safe, other than you're with someone who is demonstrating behavior that you would not engage in, but it's not necessarily threatening your own safety, such as if you're the parents of Koberger, or you're the spouse of the Brian in and Anna, the case there with the Walshes. If, you know, Brian did some pretty weird, dark shit, but it didn't necessarily equate to murder until it did. Is there signs that one should recognize that don't necessarily include violence towards others, but could easily lead to that, that one should maybe take action on, whether trying to speak up or simply disconnect from and get to a safe place?
Yeah, I think being the parent of a child is very difficult. It doesn't matter what age the child is. You're always the parent, so you're always going to have that level of connection and that level of responsibility. Internally, you feel that level of responsibility no matter the age of your child. What I'm going to say is, outside of violence, and what I, you know, not necessarily violence to others, but violence to animals and things like that. Outside of violence, is there at least a yellow flag that if you see this kind of thing happening, that it should raise your antenna to start really asking, do I need professional intervention? And what I'm going to say is, if someone is willing to cross a personal boundary, if you've already taught your child that it is not okay to steal, and they escalate from stealing, you know, a simple candy bar from a convenience store or a pen or a pencil, like if they're escalating and crossing personal boundaries, you have to anticipate that they're going to be crossing a personal boundary with you because of this. Because the closer you are to someone who's willing to cross a boundary, the more likely you are to be their first victim or their primary victim, because you're the one with easier access. They have easier access to you. So if they're willing to cross personal boundaries, if you've told them no and they continue to engage in the behavior, or you recognize that they're engaging in behaviors that you would not approve of with other people, then expect that those kinds of behaviors are either have happened to you or going to happen to you.
And that can be a difficult thing to, I think, wrap one's mind around. And people very much get wrapped up in emotions and history and things of that nature, and for good reason. But is there times when people are in relationships and they recognize these things, and maybe something traumatic has not necessarily happened? Maybe they haven't personally been victimized yet, or maybe to some extent they have, where really the only answer is to completely get that person out of your life, whether it is a spouse, whether it is a child, whether it is a parent, something of that nature, because they're so toxic and their way of thinking. I don't want to say everyone can't be cured or get help, but I think, I truly believe in some cases, this is so ingrained that I don't know that there's many answers in some of these specific cases with the psychology of some of these people, where they just truly need to walk away and be okay with that and not have the stigma of, well, family's everything or this or that. Yes, it is, but so is being alive and having that person influencing yourself or others in your life, where it is healthy to say, we're done and we're not communicating anymore.
If you ever think that, if you ever think that about the person that you are in a relationship with, and again, whether it's a family member or it's a romantic relationship, or if it's not romantic, just a platonic, if in your mind you ever think that you're not safe and secure, if in your mind you're ever thinking, wow, this person may not be who I thought that they were, then you should probably leave, right? Because if you're feeling safe and secure in a relationship, if you have a positive, healthy attachment to someone that is important in your life, then you wouldn't have those thoughts. Now, you could be manipulated. Now, you could be gaslit. Now, you could be coerced into thinking that way. But again, there's going to be a feeling that's there, that often those individuals who gaslight, who manipulate, who coerce, they start focusing on those doubts. Again, doubts exist. Listen, there's more to life than just what's between your ears. There's also your heart. There's also your stomach. There's so many different things that we respond in our environment with physiologically, that if anything is bringing doubt into your mind, then yes, you should probably start looking at whether or not this is a relationship, no matter who it is, that this is a relationship that you may need to cut out.
Are we in a society that doesn't listen to that when to an ample level? And that's why we end up with more people like this that are able to carry out what they're able to do, because people have those feelings, but they feel stuck or they don't feel there's any way to truly listen and take some sort of action to prevent to protect their own safety or the safety of others.
Oh, absolutely. You know, part of it is considered this scarcity principle. Right? It's a fallacy that we have that no one's going to love us, that no one's going to care for us, that if we leave whatever the relationship is, if we're disconnected from our parents or from friends or from a loved one, that no one is going to be there for us. That there is a big difference between feeling lonely and being alone. We don't want to feel lonely. So we expect and we anticipate that even in any relationship, that there's going to be negativity there. And yes, relationships do require work no matter what the relationship is. But if you have self-doubt of your own safety, if you have self-doubt that the thoughts that are in your head are being manipulated and coerced, then that is not a healthy person to be around.
Dr. John Della Torre, licensed psychologist, thank you so much for being on the program today and giving us your insight. Very fascinating conversation. And thank you for listening. We do greatly appreciate it. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our episodes and conversations, breaking updates on this case as we have them wherever you download podcasts. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod for more comments on this case and other cases off the air. Until next time, for all of us here at True Crime Today, thank you for listening.